You're listening to WBH Radio, your host William Holly, episode 63. Big time guest joining us today. We've been enjoying this gentleman's commentary for years, going back to ESPN and now Fox Sports 1, along with Chris Broussard, one half of the Odd Couple radio show, the one and only Rob Parker. Rob, welcome.
Thanks, William. How are you, man? Thanks for having me, buddy.
Excellent. Excellent. Rob, it has been years. What do you remember about your first ever national television appearance?
First ever? It's a good question. Let's start with first ever. Because that's more memorable. I can't even remember the first time I was on. Because I was on a few shows, you know, like here and there nationally, but not. The first show I was really on regularly nationally was Stephen A. Smith's old show.
Okay.
He had a show called Quite Frankly. I was on that show, which was on ESPN2. But my very first television appearance, I was 16 years old. It was 1980. And legendary sportscaster in New York, Warner Wolf, had a Monday night football show where he would have a Jets and a Giants play. It was a live studio audience and whatnot. And I was 16, and I wound up asking Phil Simms a question on television. And back then, this is like nobody had a VCR. You couldn't record it. You know, it was just live, and it was just done.
Right.
And years later, I wound up getting a tape of it to watch it. And I was impressed that at 16, I didn't like, my voice didn't change. I wasn't scared. You know, I just asked Phil Simms a question. I put that up on Twitter, and even Phil Simms has commented because it's 40 years ago, 41 years ago that I did this live TV show and asked a question on New York television.
That's very cool. That's very cool. But of course, Rob, many of us know you from First Take, you know, and I want to ask you, when is the first time you realized how impactful and kind of culturally relevant that show was? Like, this is career defining moments. When's the first time you realized that?
Yeah, you know, like, remember, the show started out as Cold Pizza, and there were segments called First and Ten. We used to do segments inside that show. And, you know, I always knew the debate part of it was good. You know, that's what people like. I own a barbershop in Detroit about to celebrate our 20th anniversary called Sporty Cuts, Sporty Cuts with a Z at the end, on 7 Mile Road in Detroit. And, you know, in the barbershop debates or whatever, that's what people do. You know, you get a haircut, talk about the games, talk about the personality. So I was very familiar with it. And I can remember after a show, this is up in, once we became First Take and we moved to Connecticut, because Cold Pizza used to be in New York. And we go to this meeting with a consultant who's looking at the show, trying to figure out, you know, what works, what doesn't work. So they wanted the staff and everybody to be involved in this, not just the manager of the show. So Skip and I are sitting next to each other. We had just done First Take together. And the guy says, I'm looking at your ratings. And this is a true story. He says, about every 15 minutes, the ratings spike, and then they go back down.
Right.
He said, look. And he showed us, right. Look, spike, and then they go back down. They spike, and they go. So Skip and I look at each other. And they're like, the guy's talking. He goes, you guys got to figure out what you're doing during those segments, and you need to do that. Yes. That's what you need to do. Whatever you're doing there is what you need to do. So Skip and I look at each other like, it's the first and 10 segments.
It's the debate.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, the debate aspect of it. And that's really what turned the show from like a general morning sports show with features and all kinds of interviews and stuff like that into a full-fledged debate show.
Yeah.
So that was the moment, and I remember that. It took a consultant looking at the ratings to finally determine what was the biggest part of the show and what moved the needle.
Yeah, I mean, it became a part of the sports landscape. You watch the games, and then the next morning, you want to hear with Skip and Stephen A., and Rob Parker have to say? Now, Rob, eventually that there was a suspension and ultimately ESPN opted not to renew your contract. And I always wondered, like, what was going through your mind at that time? You know, you're a sports writer. You reach what is viewed as the pinnacle. And now those four letters opt to go in a different direction. Like, what was that like for you?
It wasn't life-altering for me. I mean, obviously, I was disappointed. Right. I worked there for 8 years, had never had any incidents or any situation, never been, quote-unquote, called to the principal's office. I was doing live television for 8 years. Right. The one thing that I've always been is that I think for a lot of people, probably would have crushed their careers and they probably wouldn't have been able to recover or whatever. But I always maintain that no matter who I'm working for, what I'm doing, it's about me. It's not about the vehicle I'm working at. So I wasn't, you know, wrapped up thinking that I was ESPN. It was about Rob Parker, who works at ESPN.
Yes.
Rob Parker, who works at the Detroit News, Rob Parker, who works at the Detroit Free Press. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, so sir.
A lot of people.
You are a talent too, and it's a privilege for them to partner with you.
100%.
That's excellent.
I mean, that's the way you have to look at it. Otherwise, you'll be very. And a lot of guys, you've seen a lot of guys come and go and never see him again. Because they've hitched their wagon to one thing and think that that's who they are. You should never feel that way.
Excellent. Go ahead,
yeah,
Rob.
Yeah, I was to work there for 8 years and do the stuff that I did and First Take. People still remember me for that show. I haven't been on that show in years. Yeah. But I get it. So I'm proud of that. And when people ask me about my experience at ESPN, for real, no lie, I had 8 great years minus one day. That's right. Really the way I look at it. I really didn't have any issues there. I worked with some great people. They liked the work that I delivered. You know what I mean?
Yes,
sir.
And
the one day things just didn't work out, and you got to live with it. That's all.
Right. Keeping what you said, like, you are a talent, and that's why I was happy to see you make the transition to Fox Sports 1. Now, Rob, I watched Undisputed religiously, and there was one moment. It was you at the tables, Shannon Sharp, Skip Bayless, and I think you guys were discussing Johnny Manziel possibly getting back in the league, and, you know, you guys were discussing second chances. And towards the end of the segment, you said, "I, Rob Parker, am a man of second chances," and you extended your hand to Skip Bayless, and you guys shook. One could only surmise you were kind of maybe thanking him for something. What's the backstory behind that? That handshake. Do you remember that moment?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, Skip and I mean, we started working together in 2006 for a long time. And even after they didn't renew my contract on First Take, we stayed friends and we always talked and stuff like that, even though I wasn't on the show anymore. And when Skip got the job at Fox Sports 1, it was announced. I remember it was announced that day. And Skip called me that night.
Wow.
And said, "If you would like to work with me again and come out to LA or whatever, I'd love to have you." And that's what got me back to, you know, the national sports debate. Even after I left ESPN, I was still working at Channel 4 WDIV in Detroit. I worked for them for over 20 years.
Right.
And I still remember that people treated me well, because even after that, the day that they announced that they weren't going to renew, you know, my phone rang and picked it up. And it was my general manager from Channel 4,
wow,
Marla Drews. And she said, and I still remember this to this day, you know, at that moment, your world has changed.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
sir.
You're like, where am I going? What's going on here? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Marla said, "You know, you worked for us before you went to work for them, and you still work for us." She said, "You come in next week, we'll sign you to a new contract."
Nice.
And I felt like, it gave me the confidence that, okay, this thing happened, you just kind of live with it, but other people still value you. And she said, "We want you to be the same person you've always been on the air with us, so nothing's changed." And that was a great moment. And just to share a little other part of this is two former athletes hit me up, the first two people who hit me up after the announcement came out. One was Charles Barkley, who left a voice message, and one was Dwight Gooden, the former Mets pitcher.
Doc.
And those are the first two athletes who hit me up. And Charles gave me an inspirational message, you know, about me and about my talent. And that's just one place, you know, like he gave me a pep talk, man, you're good at what you do. And there'll be another opportunity for you. And the same thing, Dwight Gooden did the same thing. So I remember those moments. But I was never down and out. I never felt like the world was coming to an end. It was just a closed chapter. And who knows? You know how things work in life.
Yes.
That chapter could always be reopened.
Absolutely. Excellent, man. That's good. You had great people in your corner. You believed in yourself. That's an amazing story, Rob. Thank you for sharing. I want to get into these playoffs a little bit. But before we talk about the play on the court, Rob, is it possible that the fan base, the media, even the league itself is putting too much emphasis on championships? I mean, if you talk about the championships, I got to discount careers like Allen Iverson, the aforementioned Charles Barkley, Penny, Grant Hill. Like, it's too much is going in that direction, Rob. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, it's just a conversation. I don't think that Charles Barkley was one of the greatest players who ever played in the NBA. Anybody who thinks that he wasn't because he didn't win a championship, they just don't know the game. They don't. They're just reacting to people because they've won a championship, and they try to make. I'm not in that class. Now, when you start talking about the greatest of all time, then winning does matter. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like I couldn't say that Charles Barkley is the greatest player of all time if he never won. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's where when you start talking about the greatest of all time, that's when you start to nitpick and you look through somebody's career. What did they win? How many major awards did they win? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I think that's fair. But just to talk about somebody's career and whether or not they were a great player, I don't think that factors in. Like I hear people saying, oh, they're wasting so-and-so's career, and he should go team up here to be able to win. And even if they do, I don't think that necessarily makes people feel like if a player was a great player and he waited till the second to last year of his career, joined another team and was a part of it but didn't lead the team, right?
Yes.
Gary Payton won a championship, right? With Miami, I think it was,
yes.
Right?
That's not
does anybody
the
go
we
back?
Discuss.
Not right. No, nobody goes back and goes, oh, yeah, I remember when Gary Payton went. No. He was a piece of that team, but he didn't lead the team to a championship. So did that elevate Gary Payton? No. He was a great player, period. It didn't elevate him. Karl Malone tried to get one with the Lakers, but they lost to the 2004 Pistons. Was Karl Malone a great player? Absolutely. He's the second leading scorer in league history.
Right.
How's he not a great
The same with J. Kidd. You know, the J. Kidd we discuss is not the guy that won a chip with the Mavericks. It was the dude that was putting on for the New Jersey Nets, throwing alley-oops off the backboard to Kenyon Martin. But I question the league and its focus on championship because I look at people sitting out like Kawhi Leonard. I see them dealing with Zion Williamson and kick gloves. These guys' careers are going to come and go, and they're never going to be league MVP, things of that nature. Like, Kobe gave us the championships, but he also gave us the regular season and the 81 points and different moments. And I just, like, with this championship focus, those guys' careers are going to come and go. They may have a chip or two, but they won't be as impactful and relevant as some people that get out and put on every day.
I agree. And I think it's a disservice to the fans,
yes,
and to the league when people, and, you know, we know fans are now starting to come back to arenas and whatnot, but you know, I remember one in Memphis where LeBron, it was a few days before Christmas, didn't go to a Memphis Grizzlies game, didn't travel to the game. And for a lot of kids, their Christmas present was to see LeBron James play live. And I think that's unfortunate. I remember Michael played 82 games his last season.
Yes, sir.
Michael Jordan, if you ever read quotes and go listen to, he knows he's playing for the fans. Mm-hmm. And that they want to see him play. Like, I cannot not play. They came here to see me play. This might be their only opportunity to see me play. If a guy's hurt, a guy's hurt. But sitting out for rest, I'm not with it. And I know how the league can stop it. If a guy sits out just for rest, he doesn't get paid that day.
Yeah.
Or add that rest day to his stats so that there would be all zeros across the board. And the scoring average would go that way, and yeah. I bet you they would play. I mean, it's just real simple.
They sure
you will. Don't get paid, and you get zeros on your stats for that day if you're not hurt and you don't play. Now, all of a sudden, I guarantee you everybody would play.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob, with these playoffs, what has your attention? What do you think is the lead story coming out of the first round? Oh, we're still in the first round, brother.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Milwaukee, their dominance. I'm not surprised. The Heat last year, everything worked out perfect in the bubble for them. I'm not surprised. I didn't think they'd get to the finals last year. So a first-round sweep, and they really weren't in that series. So that'll be interesting. Obviously Brooklyn, you know, I wanted to see them. They haven't played that many games together. It always seems like somebody needs like a Herculean effort to beat them. You know what I mean? Somebody got to really go off in order to even have a chance to beat them, those three. So I'm paying attention to that. You know, where the Lakers are, you know, I know AD is questionable for game four. You know, the health issues with them, all the things that have to go right for them in the West. So those are the stories that I'm mostly looking at.
I'm puzzled by this whole Clippers situation and them having a hard time stopping Luka Doncic. Them not being able to kind of muster up playoff intensity. This is 2 years now. They lost to the Nuggets. Like, these are supposed to be the best wing defenders, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George. The league was supposed to be his for the next 8 years after winning that championship in Toronto. I'm a little puzzled about their lack of intensity.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't know if it's, you know, on the radio show, The Odd Couple, we did a thing. Is it Luka or is it... Is it Luka or Tyronn Lue? Because we know he's a great player, but you got to figure out something defensively. In game two, they shot 60% from the field. So it's not just Luka. Everybody else is getting off. You got to figure out if we're going to give Luka his points, we got to stop everybody else. Do you see what I'm saying? Yes. Like, that's how you work. So he can get his points and you can still beat them.
Rob, in 2018, you were named Sports Journalist of the Year by the National Association of Black Journalists. First off, congratulations.
Yes, thanks.
What level of responsibility do you feel as a black journalist to maybe highlight and tell stories and give perspectives that your white counterparts may not be able to tell? And the reason I ask this question, because I see what's going on with Kyrie Irving. You know, he's coming to the press conferences and he's saying things like, yo, there's bigger issues than basketball right now. I look at LeBron James and his unwillingness to kind of commit to whether he got vaccinated or not. Like, unless you're a black male and you know the history of the Tuskegee experiment or eugenics with a forced sterilization for black women, like, you may not understand that perspective. Or with Kyrie Irving, you may be $200 million up, but your people are not being treated right. So what responsibility as a black journalist do you feel to, like, maybe offer different perspectives than the main media can muster up?
If I'm not going to give a different perspective, then they don't really need me. I mean, I should bring to the table my knowledge, my life experiences. That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, because everybody can't come have the same view as a 50-year-old white man. Which is, you know, I'm not a 50-year-old. I'm a 50-year-old black man, you know what I mean? In my 50s. And I'm just saying, like, so I think it's just natural to if something strikes me and we need to talk about, that's what I love about our radio show, is that we just, there's two of us, and I think we've never had a two-man, all-black national radio show, sports radio show. And Chris and I are very, very conscious of it. We don't shy away from issues. Worried about, oh, well, maybe some of our other listeners don't want to hear this. No, we're two very media trained, veteran experienced broadcasters and journalists. And so we're going to shine light on anything that is relevant and important, no matter what side we fall on it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like all rah-rah. If we think that a black player hasn't done right or has made a mistake, we'll say it. If they've done right or the situation calls for, we'll jump on that. We talked about Danny Ainge acting as if he doesn't understand or doesn't know that racism goes on in Boston. I mean, that's an ultimate slap in the face to all the black people who have had issues, for him to act like, oh, I've been here for 26 years. I don't know what they're talking, what Kyrie's talking. Really?
Right.
Adam Jones, you remember Adam Jones at Fenway Park?
Yep.
CC Sabathia said he played in the major league for 20 years. He said there's only one place he's ever been called the N-word. It's Fenway Park. Yes. So don't, this whole, how about Bill Russell, who had his issues in Boston? I could go on and on and on. For Danny Ainge to just poo-poo that and is ridiculous. Yes. And Chris and I took him to task for that. So we're going to handle these things as they come around.
Rob, I got to admit, I was a little disappointed, or I'm a little disappointed in LeBron James' unwillingness to kind of speak on the vaccine. You know, you can't pick and choose when you want to be the voice of the people. You know, this is the biggest public health crisis we've had in our lifetimes, and for him to choose the punt is a little disappointing. You know, I think he's trying to play a safe line. To me, this is his equivalent to Republicans buy sneakers too.
Right. No, I agree. I don't know why you're being coy, and you know, people could debate all they want. I'm vaccinated. We lost so many people. I lost so many friends to this terrible pandemic. And I want to live, and I'm going to take a chance on, is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. Could there be some things that don't work out? Sure. But I also know the other side. We saw, Chris and I, we saw Sekou Smith. We had him on our radio show on December 23rd. Yeah. January 26th, a month later, he was dead.
He was gone.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many others. So people can roll the dice and decide that they're going to be on the out crowd. To each his own. But I talked about it when I got vaccinated. Chris talked about it when he got vaccinated. Chris's wife is a doctor.
But Rob, why do you think he's playing coy?
I don't know if he feels pressure, like he doesn't want to be like, I don't know, he's letting the black people down by saying it, or they're not going to like him because... I don't know.
He's going to disappoint one side either way, and I don't think he's ready for that smoke. And that's what you can't pick and choose when you want to be a voice for the people. You know, I find it fraudulent.
That's the same thing with China. You remember the whole thing?
Oh yeah.
LeBron, you know, acted as if he didn't know what they were fighting for, democracy. Like that's what we live with. You know what I mean? So. If you're going to be in that stage and you're going to tell people to vote for a certain person and try to be, you know, and all that, then either you're in that arena or you're not. And Michael Jordan chose not to do it. And I think that's always haunted him. Like, no one wanted him to get on the soapbox to talk about all these racial issues. But there were some that he could have made a difference in. And I think now he does a lot, you know, with helping build hospitals and all kinds of good stuff in the black community, which I applaud him. But there were times when Michael was a player that he was bulletproof and could have had help things, you know, and he didn't.
I kind of starting to respect Mike's approach, choosing to stay out when LeBron James is toeing the line and picking and choosing. Rob, another question. Can these NBA players specifically take a knee during the anthem and then go drape themselves in the American flag during the Olympics this summer? Speaking of fraud,
no, it's a good, great question. I mean, it's very difficult. Because I always say to have love for a country, that country has to love you back.
Yes, sir.
And so I give people a lot of credit when they, you know, our people in the military. You know that, right?
Yes,
my dad was in the military. My brother was in the military. I know I would have a hard time being in the military. I'm too old now, but... you know, my dad wanted me to go through ROTC when I was in college, and I just wasn't interested. I wouldn't do it, you know. And he was looking, he wanted me just saying, hey, if you have to go in, you want to be an officer, not an enlisted man. And that's what, right, that's what he wanted me to do, but I just didn't have the interest in doing it. But it's a delicate balance. It really is. And some people can justify it and say that they're playing for us, mm-hmm. you know, in this country, not for everybody, but you know, when you're draped in that flag and you know the stuff that goes on, I think it's tough. I don't know. If I were a player, athlete, I might have a hard time doing it.
Yeah. They would just be going over there to sell sneakers and market themselves internationally. You know, it's I don't know. It's a whole bunch of
stuff. I would say go back to the, what is it, 1992. No, not 1936. Okay. Is it 36? The one with Jesse Owens and a Nazi hit, yeah. A Nazi German. I mean, they're, is it 36 or 39? They won't let Jewish athletes perform. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did the other athletes go along with that? Right. I mean, I find that to be mind-boggling, mm-hmm. that you're in Nazi Germany for the Olympics and the American Jewish sprinters and runners couldn't participate. Mm-hmm. So if they can't participate, to me, nobody should have participated from the United States, but they just went on with business as usual and accepted that. That's what it was mm-hmm. in those days. I don't think it's as I don't think people would respond that way nowadays.
I think they could just really take a big stand, choosing not to go over there. That would really get the country's attention. But Rob, I want to switch gears real quick. I am surprised by kind of like the backlash that Tim Tebow is receiving, or the Jaguars are receiving for signing Tim Tebow. To me, Rob, the deal makes perfect sense. Urban Meyer is getting ready to embark on his new career as a head coach in the NFL, and he needs some people in his platoon he can trust.
Nah, I'm going to stop you. This is white privilege up and down. It would be different if Tim Tebow was coming in to hold a clipboard as the third quarterback. But he's 33 years old, going to be 34. He's been out of the league since 2012, almost a decade. He's slow already. I've read all the scouting reports from people. He's an average athlete at best, and this is a mistake by Urban Meyer to give a job to. If he was a tight end, or you mean to tell me Urban Meyer has been a college coach for all these years, there are no other younger players who played the position of tight end, who actually played the position. This is hooking up your friend, somebody who you like, who doesn't deserve the job. I think it's going to backfire, and you know about a locker room. Players know who belongs on the team and who don't. Mm-hmm. And once they look at it and look like this guy is okay, favoring this guy, and he's not better than these other tight ends who are here and he makes the team, you're going to have an issue. It was just like when Urban Meyer hired Chris Doyle, the strength and conditioning coach from Iowa, who had the racial issue. What happened there? The players let him know, man, this dude ain't working with us. You know what I'm saying? So you have a chance of alienating yourself. And Tim Tebow hasn't earned this, just the same way the Mets gave him a position in the minor leagues. He hadn't played baseball in 10 years. Dude, these are white privilege situations. Nobody else who hadn't played baseball in 10 years would get a roster spot in the minor leagues, okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody else. If you could name me, now you got all these ex-players trying to come back playing different positions because they're bulked up, you know what I mean, and too heavy to play their original position. You know, like that's what they see. And from all the people I talk to, they say he's not going to make the team, but we'll see. I think Urban Meyer, and then is he really here to help us win, or is he Urban Meyer's snitch in the locker room? Or is he Urban Meyer's, you know what I mean, microphone? Yeah. I'm like, well, you got to wonder about that kind of stuff.
Bro, he hasn't played since 2012, but I say that's of no fault of his own. That was because of weak franchises and coaches and general managers who were afraid to bring him in because of the pressure and the fan base that was going to follow.
You're being way too kind. I've talked to guys who have been in practice, you know, analysts and former players. They say, I can't throw consistent 15-yard pass. Like he can't do it. That's why they had every reason to want to have Tim Tebow there, to be the front man for a franchise, right? He's squeaky clean. He's a good-looking guy. He says all the right things. He's so positive. Why wouldn't you want to prop this guy up if he could play? The reason is that because he couldn't play. That's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You don't really believe that they didn't give him a chance because of fan pressure. No, it's because they watched him. He had plenty of opportunity. He beat the Steelers in the playoff game. Yes. Right? And they couldn't wait to get rid of him after that. I mean, because they knew that that was a fluke. They won the game, but the guy can't. He couldn't play quarterback in the NFL.
He couldn't be a starting quarterback. He might have deserved the spot as the third quarterback, and that's what franchises didn't want to bring him in. I liken him to Carmelo. Those organizations didn't want to bring in Melo because he was going to come as a Hall of Famer and the media.
I disagree.
Okay.
Carmelo is a great player compared to Tim Tebow. They're not even in the same on the same wavelength. I think you're
no,
I
not
think
not, it's the, not talent, Rob, but the pressure and the media attention that was going to come for Melo being the 12th guy was going. It was
Carmelo,
similar to go ahead.
But Carmelo would have that right because he's a guy who's going to had Hall of Fame stats. Mm-hmm. So yes, there would be more pressure to have to play him because of what he's accomplished. Tim Tebow hasn't accomplished anything. That's what I'm saying. The only pressure would be those Tebow fans who want him to play. But guys I respect watched him practice in Denver, and they said he can't play.
And that's why he's being brought in as the tight end. Rob, let me ask you, is leadership a skill and a quality that you need on your team?
You can make him a coach if you want to do that. You just want, seriously. But a tight end, he's going to be the third or fourth string tight end. Why is Tim Tebow on the team? Seriously. Is that going to make the difference in whether or not they win football games? As he's a fourth string tight end.
This is one of the most inspiring college athletes ever. His speech is immortalized on the campus of the University of Florida. There's another speech when he said, "Give me 30 minutes for the rest of your life." Like people, that leadership is a skill. You know, I say back on the University of Florida when Cam Newton was stealing laptops and Aaron Hernandez wanted to be old dog for menace, Urban Meyer could count on Tim Tebow. So now as he embarks on this new journey, he wants this man to watch his back. And Rob, it's different. Being in an organization and you know cover professional sports, he will have a different platform as a player, as one of the guys. He can help bring Trevor Lawrence along. He can help bring those players along.
He can't, because if the players know that he's not there because he can't play, that's where you lose. You got to be one of them.
Right.
You can't be, you just got the hookup and you don't belong here. They won't respect you the same way. You know that. And it's not just him, it's anybody. If Andy Reid wanted to put his son on the team, right, because he's an inspirational leader kind of guy, he'd be like, what? Oh, no, he's not going to be on the team.
Got you. Got you. Rob, what can you tell us about your new website, man, before we get out of here?
Love the website. It's called MLBBro.com. We cover black and brown major league players. We've been up since April 1st. It's just my lifelong dream and work, and I'm loving every minute of it. We're in a lane all by ourselves. And the response has been great from Major League Baseball to former black players to current black players to fans. Even on social media, we get all the time like, man, I've been waiting for a site like this. And we don't cover the games per se. We leave that to MLB.com, but we cover the black and brown players. When we talk about brown, we're talking about black players mixed with something else. Mm-hmm. Those are the people where Aaron Judge is a brown player who we cover. Giancarlo Stanton, a brown player who we cover. But you should definitely give it a look and check it out. It's got so much good stuff and videos and whatnot, so we love it.
Rob Parker, thank you so much, man, for having that, brother. Thank you.
No. William, thank you, and best of luck for your venture and your career and everything you're trying to accomplish. And all I'm going to tell you is just you just got to keep working and keep fighting through and just keep waiting for your opportunity, man. But be ready for that opportunity to come through, because I think a lot of people, you know, never thought I would be doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And they were wrong.
They were. Thanks, Rob.
All right.